Mike.
Hello, John.
I'm John.
I'm Mike.
And you're listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Yay!
The podcast where...
anything can happen.
Yeah.
Except it won't.
Probably not.
No. No. It's much more likely is that we'll drink some beer, talk about music, and chat a bit of shit.
Yeah. And maybe listen to the guy next door slamming his door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's painting one of his tyres. It was very interesting.
Weird.
I ask questions. This, I don't. Maybe it's a normal thing. I don't own a car.
I'm just about to release this EP, and one evening this week, the discs arrived, and they'd come through. So I came home, and there was a FedEx while you were out. We missed you, sort of sticker.
Aww.
Through the letterbox.
That's nice of them.
They said they'd left the parcel across the road.
Uh-huh.
So I...
At someone's house, I assume.
Yes.
just like in the gutter.
On the pavement. We left it under a car. so we've left this with number such and such across the road.
Mm-hmm.
So I nipped across the road, knocked on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And this weird bloke answered the door.
Mm.
Wearing a dressing gown. Bear in mind, this was about 7 o'clock at night.
There's nothing weird about wearing a dressing gown at 7 o'clock at night.
The look on his face made it weird.
That's a bit different.
Because he kind of looked sheepish, but was also grinning.
How many of them think he managed to get onto his penis? God. You're just spinning them around really nice.
The grimmest hoopla.
Very thin but very long.
Handed me the parcel and it was slightly warm.
Where his balls have been resting. I'm not going to buy this. I think I'm just going to get the downline. Sorry, John.
It was just the weirdest bit. There's something about the people who live on the other side of the road from me.
Because
as I crossed the road with the parcel, the guy who lived next door to him came out with the food recycling bin.
Mm.
And he just went, "This fucking stinks." and then looked up, saw me and went, "Oh, yeah." I mean, that guy lives next door. He was, the other week, he was banging on the front door, and his wife opened the door and just went, "Why didn't you just come in?" Because the door had shut, but it's not on a latch. and they had an argument in the street about the door. Like,
I used to have neighbours like that. Yeah. Now I've got a nice flourishing vegetable garden.
Have you?
Yeah. Those two things are not linked. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today, John?
Today, you might remember, because I've got a few things on the go at the moment, but you might remember many, many episodes ago, I was talking about the Star Trek The Next Generation box set.
I see it right in front of us there, the Blu-ray.
Conspicuously
opened and perused.
Indeed. I have spoken about the first couple of episodes of season one that I'd watched.
Yes, including what you reckon is the worst episode of Trek ever.
The worst episode ever, and then there was also the racist episode.
I don't remember you mentioning the racist episode.
Did you not?
Good Lord.
Did I not mention Planet of the Black People?
No!
There's an episode which is essentially Planet of the Black People.
Is it Fear of a Black Planet? Like,
that's what it pretty much boils down. Pretty much what it boils down to. I'm amazed that even got made.
It was the 90s. Things were a bit weird then.
It was 86.
80s. Jesus.
God,
was it that long ago?
It was.
I seem to just have this idea that all of Next Gen happened in the 90s. That's not even feasible.
No. It's pretty stunning.
The 80s were even weirder.
There is an episode where they
more cocaine at the very least.
Yes.
Yeah.
They go to a planet to procure a vaccine for a planet that's having some sort of epidemic.
Of black people.
The planet of the black people is where they produced the cure.
Oh, I see.
All the inhabitants of this planet, they're all black and they're all wearing like turbans and flowing gowns. And
when you say that, are they actually African American?
Yes,
they're not blacked up.
No,
right. Because I just had this image of it all being kind of hot mum.
They've hired a lot of African Americans to be the population of a planet that everyone's very wary of, and then they kidnap the security officer.
Brilliant.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, season one, I'm amazed they got past season one.
Yeah, from the sounds of it.
There's one really, really, really good episode in season one called Symbiosis, which again is related to a drug, oddly enough. But it's a really good story. It's actually very well played out, and that's great. There's an episode called Data Law, which is really good, and it's where they discover Data's evil twin.
Law.
Law, and that's pretty good. There's a bit of a sort of... Law has a twitch.
I remember this.
Yeah, it's... And that's a bit... But
it's a bit gonzo, isn't it? He just kind of takes his twitch and puts it on Data until he comes... Oh, you're Law, but I'm Data. Lols.
Season one, generally... The cast does very well with a series of pretty bad scripts. And it's either... There's an episode where they all become sex tourists until Wesley falls into a greenhouse and gets sentenced to death.
I bet it was Riker's idea, wasn't it, to be sex tourists?
he's very pro being a sex tourist.
Oh, Riker, you dirty bastard.
Riker in season one is just one constant thwarted erection.
<They're> perpetually priapic. Number one.
He goes into a sulk when Troy gets engaged.
Yes, I remember that. He sulks any time Troy sniffs around another bloke.
Yes, he does.
Despite the fact he doesn't really seem to want to settle down with her, because he's too busy sowing his wild beard.
Yeah. He sulks when Troy gets engaged. He is just about to start nobbing a prominent politician on a female... driven society, but it gets interrupted.
Always a female driven society.
But he gets interrupted by her aide.
I say, there's always a female driven society, and there's always some member of the crew who is just a walking penis. It just has to go and try and knob the most senior member of that female society, ruining both the society and the crew. And everything.
And there's an episode where he creates
a sci-fi staple.
He creates a woman on the holodeck, and he's just about to start snogging her when Captain Picard interrupts him.
Have you seen the Riker Googles? I think it's a Twitter.
I do see it get retweeted occasionally, but I haven't.
It is hilarious with the nonsense that that's come out with.
Yeah. It's amazing. And the series, I've finished season two, and season two levels out a lot. They really pull their act together. Brent Spiner jokes that it's because Whoopi Goldberg joins the cast, and it made everyone think, shit, better generate some quality content. But season two is a lot better. It's amazing how steep the improvement curve is between season one and season two, and I'm just on to season three, and that improves again. And so, yeah, thank god it did.
On that, have you seen the cartoon about Chief O'Brien and his pointless life on the Enterprise? The fact that he operates the transporter, the fact that the computer can transport people from anywhere in the ship to anywhere in the ship or outside of the ship.
It doesn't need anyone to do it.
Yeah, so he has no real purpose in life. It's kind of brilliant. Riker's always trying to have sex with Keiko during that.
Yeah, if you just stay at these controls.
That's basically it. They're not even sneaky about it. It's just blatant that Keiko's going to see Riker again.
Yeah.
For sexy times.
But
although there is one time where O'Brien accidentally teleports Tasha Yar out of her shower into the transporter bay. Like, whoops, sorry.
There's a wonderful moment in season one, I forgot about this. It's the last episode that Denise Crosby filmed. It wasn't Tasha Yar's last episode. I think that was the one after.
Spoiler alert, she dies.
Picard and Crusher are leaving one of the cargo bays, and they're walking out, and as the door opens you can see Tasha Yar in the background. Just before the door closes, Denise Crosby waves at the camera.
Brilliant.
And it stayed in. They didn't notice. It's wonderful.
That's fantastic.
Like, the door closes and she just goes, bye.
Nice working with you.
But yeah, I mean, season two has one episode that should have been in season one, where they go to this old abandoned colony and it's full of Irish.
Fantastic.
It's full of Irish.
The Irish.
With hay all over the place, chickens,
potatoes.
Yeah. Essentially, and your main Irish man is a man with a bowler hat and a jacket and
Peyton
a waistcoat.
Begara.
And he spits in his hand as he goes to make a deal with a man of a colony that's done a lot better than they have.
But how's business been lately, Paddy? Ah, it's been shite.
And there's a matriarch in this Irish society who's all like, oh, I suppose you'll be doing all the important stuff while we'll just raise the babies. Who's going to be looking after the children? Oh, you man.
This sounds so awful that I have to watch it.
Yeah, they beam them aboard and they basically make them live in one of the cargo bays until they figure out what to do with them.
In the steerage hold, kind of like the Titanic, where all the poor people went.
Yeah.
Who were also Irish.
Essentially.
Fantastic. Like, were they doing jigs all around and about the place and seducing the aristocracy?
They do lean rather heavy on the old sort of Irish folk music. Whenever the doors open, you just hear. Chief O'Brien must have been spinning in his transporter room.
God almighty.
Yeah.
Some really awful stuff was done in the name of Star Trek, wasn't it? Before they finally sorted their stuff and brought the Borg in.
Yes.
Bring in the Borg.
Oh, it's funny, because last time we were talking about it and you were saying that you preferred Star Trek to be a bit more sort of light-hearted and a bit more nonsense.
Or at least have one eye on the nonsense.
Yes.
Yeah, to do it straight, but be aware of what kind of nonsense they're putting out.
It's when they do that in TNG, it doesn't work. Seasons 1 and 2... Seasons 1 and 2 really bear out the fact that, oh God, no, this is not, this doesn't work with the format.
Whereas it seems, I don't know if it's just the nature of the time or the cast or whatever, but the original track is tongue-in-cheek brilliance.
Yeah. Have you seen the new film?
I have not.
Beyond is very good.
Is it? Is it better than
Into Darkness?
Yes. Excellent.
Yeah. We should
Talk about music, shouldn't we?
Talk about something else, yeah.
Yeah, we're just chatting track.
Yeah.
For all day.
Which isn't a bad thing, but that's not why you're here, ladies and gents.
It's not, is it? Hit that sting, dude.
Yeah!
Whoa! Yeah!
You can't handle that, can you?
I couldn't.
No.
I'd wet myself.
Oh, dear.
It's all right. I'll clean up later.
Thank you.
What's the theme today, John? I've forgotten.
The theme today is bands or musicians that we were well into at one point but have kind of gone off the boil a bit now.
Yes. We were massively into these people.
Yeah.
But we've just, for some reason, maybe it's them, maybe it's us, Maybe we just mutually just drifted apart, but we're no longer as into them. So it's kind of just picking something of their output.
Yes.
Giving it a damn good listen and seeing how we feel about it, seeing it rekindles that flame.
Yes. Well, for me, this is a big one to start off with, and there are probably a lot of people listening to this who know me that won't be surprised. But Crowded House.
Crowded House. Those lads.
Yeah, they were the band that made me get into lyric writing and playing guitars, and then I didn't really listen to them for a very long time. When I started listening to Crowded House, it was 1996. I'd been given the Best Of as a Christmas present, and then 2 weeks later ITV broadcast the Farewell to the World concert that they played in November on the steps of the Sydney Opera House, announcing that they were calling it a day, packing it in. And so just as I started really listening to them, so they ended. And so it became
awkward.
It became 2 or 3 years of really digging into all the stuff that they'd released prior to that and realising what a great band I've just missed out on.
It's sad when that happens, isn't it? I mean, it's happened to me a couple of times in the past where I've been like, oh, look at that band. Oh, this book.
Yeah.
Oh. Without me ever getting the chance to see them live.
Yeah, and that was gutting. I mean, the Farewell to the World concert was 1996.
Mm.
10 years later, it came out on DVD. And then just the other week, my friend Sarah Brennan and I...
Hiya, Sarah.
Hiya. We got together and we watched the Farewell to the World concert again.
Mm.
And I hadn't watched it in nearly 10 years.
Mm.
And so...
That's a good way of reconnecting with them. That's
brought it all back. It was an amazing concert, and it's funny because people always joke with me about Crowded House not being very popular, and blah 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 blah. But you watch the Farewell to the World concert, and they filled a huge space between the Sydney Opera House and the whole sort of Sydney Opera House steps. There was thousands and thousands of people there.
I don't know why people get this idea that Crowded House aren't very popular. They were massive. I mean,
yeah.
I remember that advert for the Best Of in the mid-80s with the guy with the smooth voice.
Yeah.
Who advertised all of the popular music acts on the television.
Yes.
Who said, you know more Crowded House songs than you think.
Yeah.
And then it would play all of the Crowded House songs.
Mid-90s.
Mid-90s, right there in plumb deep in the 90s. And, yeah, they would then play a succession of them. And I go, yep, I know that. Yeah, I know all of these songs.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right, mate. It was one of those best ofs. That best of.
It was one of the most accurately advertised.
Yeah. And it was like that and the James best of.
Yeah.
Were kind of essential items for most people, you know, discerning music fans,
yeah,
who were too lazy to buy the actual back catalogue. So not that discerning, then, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever.
But it was, yeah.
Some of us are busy.
I think they started in about 84, 86, somewhere around there.
Mm.
And they spent a long time sort of schlepping around bars and places in LA doing acoustic sets.
Someone's in your back alley, John.
Oh, you can tell by the way it rattles around. Their first two albums, they were getting really good airplay, they were having really good music videos made for them. And generally, having a really good time with it, and they had some really good backing from their label, and then they released Woodface, which is one of their most critically acclaimed albums, and it has songs such as Weather With You, Fall at Your Feet, It's Only Natural, and they were big.
I know all of those songs, John.
Yeah, they were big singles, but they also released a song called Chocolate Cake. Now, chocolate cake didn't have too much of an effect on their support outside of the US. But in the US, chocolate cake contains a lyric that says, "The excess of fat on your American bones will cushion the impact as you sink like a stone." And the label got less supportive.
Really?
Really, really. So it shot them in the foot a little bit in terms of career, but the people who loved them still loved them.
Mm.
And so it didn't, you know, it didn't dampen anyone's ardour, for want of a better phrase. But then it leads you on to, they made an album, Together Alone, which is my favourite of their studio albums, because it's, each album they got better and better at recording their material, and their aim was to as closely represent their live sound on record as they could. And Together Alone was, I think, the pinnacle of that, that they achieved in that sense. And that's got songs such as Distant Sun, Private Universe, Pineapple Head, and great album. And they really, really inspired my songwriting. I mean, I would hate to have to read anything I wrote at that time, because I'm pretty sure it would be dire. But they had a big impact on how I wanted to play music and how I wanted to, you know, present it. I really wanted a band that had that kind of feel to it, which I think I achieved recently. But
how do you feel going back to listening to them now? Is it still special? Do you feel the love tonight?
Crowded House pre-96 still has a very special place in my heart. I feel very nostalgic when I listen to Crowded House, and it reminds me of all the summers of sort of between 96 and 98 when I was discovering all their stuff for the first time. And then it kind of makes me think of when Neil Finn started his solo tour. And I went to, that was the first time I went to see him, at the Manchester Apollo. And I came out of that show going, yeah, I'm going to start learning to play guitar now. That's, I've decided. and so it was all an interesting path through to that. Crowded House, as it stands, don't know how, I have really mixed feelings about it, because I was really glad that he brought Crowded House together again in the wake of Paul Hester's suicide in 2005. But it was bittersweet, and Paul Hester, I've said this in the podcast where we talked about our our fantasy band. Paul Hester had a particular gleam, I think, to his onstage persona, and he had this ability to drop harmonies on songs where you weren't expecting harmonies to be. And I don't know, there's something about Crowded House's recorded output since he brought the band back together, that some of it is as mind-blowing as it was then, and some of it is fun to listen to, some of it isn't. But that's just from my point of view. I could never say that Neil Finn was wrong to bring Crowded House back together, because I don't think he was, because it feels like the right thing to do in the wake of all his bandmates mourning Paul Hester. It seems like a good thing. It doesn't have the same special ring to it that pre-breakup Crowded House had, but yeah, they're still a very special band, and they're still exceptional, and their live shows are still amazing. I went to see them when they released Time on Earth when they were touring that, and the show was an excellent show. All the wit was there, all the humour, all the really, some really interesting reinterpretations of old songs. I like Neil Finn both solo and part of Crowded House. I don't think that's ever going to change, but I think in the years since I first started listening to Crowded House, I discovered other musicians and bands that pushed me further into developing what I wanted to do and what I enjoyed listening to. It's interesting. It's interesting to go back and like Sarah and I watched the Farewell to the World concert, and that was just not having watched it for 10 years since it was released, since it was first broadcast 20 years ago. It's just it's a very strange experience. So yeah, tell me your thoughts about Crowded House, because I'm probably going to have to edit a lot of what I said out.
My thoughts about it, I like them. They've never been anything special to me. I've not really had a moment with them.
Yeah.
That I've felt, oh, this excites me.
Yes.
But they have done a lot of really good songs. I mean, when you talk about Woodface.
Yeah.
All the three songs that you listed, yeah, those are great songs.
Yeah.
Amongst the stuff that was on that best of, it was like, they're obviously a bunch of lads who can write a really good song.
Yes.
So I've got no criticism to offer of their technique and their ability. It's just there's something that's never really gripped me.
No.
And, you know, that's more about me than it is about them.
Yeah.
So I don't really have a great deal to say. One thing I will say, though, have you ever listened to the original radio series that Flight of the Conchords did?
Yes, I have, yes.
Because I just found it hilarious that Neil Finn was a regular guest on the phone with... I can't remember what they called him, but it was Murray in the TV series.
Yeah,
I can't manager. Remember what they called him in the...
Was it Glenn?
I don't think so. It might have been, but because I just don't remember.
No, I can't.
But yeah, they got the character who would become Murray.
Yeah.
It was great to see him calling up Neil Finn, and Neil Finn not being particularly pleased to hear from him. Yeah.
Baffled and nonplussed.
Yes. And probably sleepy as well.
Yeah, because I think there's an episode where one of the guys gets an arrow through his hand.
Yes.
And he's ringing him up going, we're going to have to cancel the gig because we can't do the tour because he's got an arrow through his hand.
I like the way you abandoned the Kiwi accent. Sensible manoeuvre, John. Yeah. Sensible manoeuvre.
We're going to have to cancel the gigs because he's got...
Owie!
Because he's got an arrow through his hand.
Laugh! Fate and regard! You perforated the wee lad. Give him a potato and be fine.
But yeah, it's really funny just to hear Neil just sort of going, well, okay, well,
it's
good luck with that.
It was his reaction to most of it was kind of fine.
Yeah. Thanks for your advice, Neil.
Oh, it was just an excellent little idea that I just kind of got this feeling that they couldn't quite believe they'd got Neil Finn to agree to it.
I know.
And it was just a little thing that happened once an episode.
Yeah, just happened to have his number because we met at a party.
It really works.
Yeah.
Even down to the sound of bafflement.
It's a wonderful device. And there's a programme that was on BBC 4. Neil Finn, Ryan Adams and Janice Ian were performing on Songwriters Circle. And the whole point is, yes, they... Each participant takes it in turns to play a song, have a bit of a chatter about it and play it.
Yeah.
But every so often, everyone joins in on a song.
Yeah.
So Janice Ian says that the performance went south when Adams refused to collaborate on Fall at Your Feet.
Huh. It does strike me as a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
Ryan Adams.
Janice Ian says, I have to say that in 45 years as a professional performer, I haven't seen that kind of behaviour before. I expect a certain amount of narcissism in performers. I don't expect complete and total self-absorption.
Damn! Say what you mean!
Ian accused Adams of using his phone to bid for a T-shirt on eBay while he was supposed to be playing his part in Finn's song, as rehearsed 3 or 4 times earlier.
Amazing.
At one point, Ian, writing on Adams' internet message board, explained Finn totally lost it with Ryan and asked him why he couldn't just sing the song the way we'd rehearsed it. Ryan, 36 and 17 years younger than his partners, accused Finn of yelling at him on stage after he refused to collaborate on the song. Another witness said Ryan then told Finn to just sing the fucking song. My experience was we had a nice time until Neil started yelling at people on stage. And I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. If you yell at me, I'm not going to be nice back.
Interesting.
We had lists that actually said collaborate for only two songs. The rest were meant to be solo, and I stood by that. Ryan claimed that his manager received an apology from Finn. Anyway, Finn's only contribution to the slanging match was on his Twitter account. Ahead of the broadcast actually being aired on BBC4, said, "Well, songwriter circle will be interesting. Watch out for lovely backing vocals on Fall at Your Feet from Ryan Adams." And that was his only contribution to the whole sort of debacle. But yeah, I've never really gone for Ryan Adams on the basis that I've not really appreciated him as a human being.
Also, he's kind of adequate.
Yeah,
he's still. I mean, he's done some stuff that I've thoroughly enjoyed, but yeah. Some of the things that are supposed to be absolutely fantastic, I've just found a bit all right.
Yeah,
but we're not here to talk about Ryan Adams.
No, we're not.
Maybe another time we will. Maybe a time will come when we will discuss Ryan Adams and his adequacy.
Yes.
But no.
Ryan Adams' adequacy sounds like an ATP event.
Yes! We've had John Cage's indeterminacy. Now it's Ryan Adams' adequacy.
With Stuart Lee. Right.
Third stage. Cancelled.
Thanks, Barry. When they took a look with the microscope, it turned out to be a collection of dead clams.
Oh, not clams. Mm. I thought it was oysters.
Oh,
they're a bit classier and sexier. We're talking about
clams. And less clammy.
Yes. Talking about... I don't even know anymore. Talking about words, here's someone who put some together to some music. The person who whose music I was a big fan of for a long, long time, but kind of drifted away from, is Tori Amos. Yeah, I was massively into Tori Amos.
Yeah.
Certainly up to and including her fourth album.
Mm.
And then, over time, I don't know if it was the quality of her music going off the boil or my interest waning and being dragged off in different directions, but I was less and less interested with progressive albums.
Yeah.
But I always maintained in my heart that the first four albums were brilliant, despite the fact that I've seldom listened to them.
Mm.
Oh, you know, as time wore on.
Yeah.
So, as an experiment, I picked up the one that I'd always regarded as my absolute favourite, or Boys for Pele.
Yes.
And gave it a good old listen. Because I had that on tape while I was at university.
Yeah.
And listened to it a hell of a lot in the little Walkman. Not the same red Walkman that I had when I was 10. That had long since died a death.
That's it.
This was a different Walkman. Still a basic cassette Walkman.
Yes.
And yeah, I utterly and totally fell in love with that album. This time though, I listened to the CD version that I bought some years later,
mm-hmm.
which is slightly different track listing. There's one track that I actually can't remember the name of that was excised from the album and replaced, much to my chagrin,
mm-hmm.
by Armin van Helden's remix of Professional Widow. Yeah.
That's harsh.
Right. Becoming a fan of Tori Amos started two things. Firstly, my love of Tori Amos.
Yeah.
And secondly, my abject hatred of Armin van Helden. because I identified in his work on his Armin Star Trunk Funkin' remix of Professional Widow.
Yeah.
Something that I later identified in other creations of his, where he'll basically just take a bit of the song, repeat it until you're sick of it, and then bank the enormous check.
It just...
It's devoid of any ideas. It infuriates me. But especially on Professional Widow, because the original, unmixed track is so bizarre and angry and creepy in places. And just such a strange song. To return to this really basic...
Has to be said as well. Idiot. I mean, that infuriating. That remix contains so little of Tori Amos that it doesn't really merit crediting anything to her with it.
Not really. Not really at all. I mean, it features the line, "Honey, bring it close to my lips." Yeah. Yeah. And it's got to be big.
Yeah.
And that the little weird mid bit that it basically just lifted straight out of the original song and dumped to stick out like a sore thumb in the middle of this egregious remix.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's.
But yeah, so they there's two versions of Professional Widow on this version the album I've got. One track I can't remember the name of that's been excised. I put it on the cassette. I'm sure you're about to Google it as I go.
Which one of these is it?
For some reason you've got Mr. Zebra Live on there. That's interesting. But you've still got Tallulah the Tornado Mix. The original version of Tallulah is better. Mm. I think it's In the Springtime of His Voodoo.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain that's the track that was kicked off.
That title's a bit weird. We'll just get rid of that and we'll put on the...
I like the way you're doing a variety of different accents today. You know,
I'm trying to branch out.
I believe that was actually your ex-housemate, Ian.
Yeah.
But, Tallulah the Tornado Mix is not the same horror show as Armin Starr Trunk Funkin' Remix.
No,
But the original version of Tallulah is still better. I can live with a tornado mix.
Yeah.
But yes, it was fascinating listening to this album again, because there were tracks that I remembered vividly, such as Professional Widow.
Yeah.
And Caught a Light Sneeze.
That was my favourite.
But Caught a Light Sneeze is a brilliant tune. And Mr. Zebra, which is it's a winsome, silly little ditty. That I kind of love it.
Yes.
Even though it's just small and daft. It's a minute and a half or something like that. And it's there and then it's not. And that's all. It's a dandelion head. And it's great.
It's interesting as well, because she doesn't over-rely on musicians. She's actually quite sparing with a lot of the arrangements, which means that when other instruments do come into the fore, it's...
Yeah, exactly. It is remarkable. A lot of the tracks on this album are incredibly spare and sparse. I mean, listen to something like Blood Roses. There's a hollowness to it. I don't know if it's an actual harpsichord or just a keyboard with a harpsichord sound on it.
Yeah.
I think there are some tracks where she plays actual harpsichord and others where it's a keyboard with a harpsichord sound.
Yes.
I think Caught a Light Sees is definitely an electronic keyboard.
Yeah.
It's odd and empty sounds from certain tracks like that. But then there are others where it is a much fuller sound.
Yeah.
There's one track that I'd almost completely forgotten about that blindsided me somewhat while I was listening to it, which is the Donut song.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd almost completely forgotten that song, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that one starts very slow and quiet and spare, but it layers it on and layers it on until there are moments where it's thick with orchestration.
Oh, is that the one, the brass?
I don't think so. I don't remember a great deal of brass on it. There's one that starts with some brass. It almost sounds like a Hovis advert at the start.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the track after the Donut song, I think.
Yeah.
There's so many tracks in this album, I always forget the bloody names of them.
but yeah, I did that one with the brass section. It gets really intense, because the way her vocals coupled with the intensity of the brass.
There might be a bit of brass. There's a very big string section at certain points. There's a lot of orchestra. There's a lot going on that it plays to miss various parts of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it builds up from nothing into a lot, and then back to very little again at the end. Which she does actually very well with a lot of other songs. I mean, from other albums, there's a couple from Under the Pink that they just kind of songs that seem to change masks as they go along and just become something completely other. Yes, Anastasia from Under the Pink is one of her longer songs, and again, that one chops and changes stylistically a bit. That's got a really big string section. This seems to come out of nowhere. Yeah. You're on strings, fuckers! And there's some piano again.
I got this. And as well, I mean, I think her voice is recorded really, really well, because she can go from anything from a really harsh yell to almost whispering.
Mm. She's quite something live.
Yeah.
She's a remarkable presence.
Yeah.
I saw her during the From the Choir Girl Hotel tour, which is her fourth album.
Yeah.
She was touring with a proper full band. When you say full band, I mean it's like a regular size alternative rock band.
Yeah.
Not like not an orchestra and have some strings there and some brass there. Not the full band she would have needed to actually recreate the entire album. She was working with an actual band from the Choir Girl Hotel. But no, I couldn't tell you what any of the rest of the band looked like because my eyes were on her.
Yeah.
You wouldn't look anywhere else. She's a really intense, eye-catching performer, especially when... Because she'll have her piano on one side and a keyboard on the other.
Yeah.
And she'll be playing a keyboard with one hand, the piano with the other, straddling the piano stool and singing.
Yeah.
And he's like, God, woman! it's amazing to watch her.
I know.
So I think you're probably getting the vibe already that my reconnection with the work of Ms. Amos
went very well
indeed. And that album in particular, but also I'm going to listen to more of her stuff more frequently.
Yeah,
and maybe even because I got some of her later albums. Well, when I say I got them, I bought them. I didn't get them.
Yeah.
but I think I might need to give them another go.
Yeah.
Because maybe I've just been a bit hasty in casting them aside.
Mm. I know I have a friend, Jenny, who is from Germany.
Jenny from Germany? Hello, Jenny from Germany. Hope you're listening.
We met actually through going to Nerina Palo concerts. And she's also, and Jenny has in the past tried to put me on to listening to Tori Amos, and I burned the CDs off and just never got around to listening to them, which is unforgivable. But she did also put me on to a woman called Vienna Teng, who's well worth a listen.
Okay.
I mean, Jenny has a weakness for women playing piano.
I still are, yeah. Musically. Oh, yeah, I like a bit of Regina Spektor as well. She works the piano well.
Yeah.
So it was good.
And so...
And Amanda Palmer, of course.
Yeah.
Big fan of Amanda Palmer.
But I think it was Jenny who shared this video with me. Tori Amos had put the front row or the front two rows for...
She always reserves the very front rows for the real hardcore fans.
Real hardcore fans. So two people had got into the front row.
Mm.
And she kicked them out of the concert for talking. And it was a proper...
She gave them a right talking to.
Yeah.
Like, it's proper school mistress. But it was like she was telling them off. She was disappointed in them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yes, it was a bit of swearing, but it wasn't like yelling and losing a rag over it. No, she was giving them just a... She was disappointed.
Yeah.
She wasn't angry, she was disappointed.
Which in so many ways is so much worse.
So much worse. they looked... A kind of bashful. But yeah, fair enough, I say, because when you save those rows for your real hardcore lifelong fans, the people who will have paid a little bit over the odds for the tickets or deliberately stayed up late to get them or bought them through specific fan club avenues. Yeah. I'm not sure how she does it.
No.
But they've done something special to get hold of those tickets. Wink. but yeah, It would be infuriating for you to look down and see just two people having a bit of a chat. Like,
yeah.
I'm playing music here. Shut your grid. Enjoy the piano stylings of Tori Amos.
Yeah.
Shit house.
It was a really good listen. I really enjoyed it because there's a lot of very rich sounds on that album. Mm. And at some point I will do Jenny some justice and actually listen to the things she sent me.
Hashtag justice for Jenny. I also do feel that that album is the one where she sounds least like she's trying to do a Kate Bush impression.
Do you know, it's weird that you say that
because
I was trying to decide internally whether that would be a helpful comparison to make, because
every bugger who's ever listened to Tori Amos has made a Kate Bush comparison. It's an obvious comparison to make because you know she's a solo female artist with a great big mane of hair
and
who is quite mad.
and using a very wide vocal range.
Mm, but so. But it definitely felt the most. I mean, her debut album is very much like a confessional in large parts of it. You know, it's deeply unpleasant.
Yes,
but she's still kind of finding her own way musically. So the obvious comparison, and again in Under the Pink, she's starting to find a bit more of a unique sound, but still yeah. recalls a lot of Kate Bush. But in Boys of Belly, it's such an odd album.
Yeah.
And yes, I know that Kate Bush probably could make it.
Yeah.
Because she's quite an unusual artist who works in a lot of different ways. But yeah. it's the one that feels the most uniquely Tori Amos
yes.
to me. And I love it. And I've always maintained that I love it. And it's relieving to know Yes, I do. I do genuinely love it.
It is a relief when you go back to something that you listened to years ago and discover that, yes, thank God, it is as good as it was when I listened yes. to it.
And also, it's an album I will occasionally trot out as being one of my all-time favourites.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I listen to it, but I feel justified in saying that.
And
it's a special album. Who knew?
Think
and
on that.
And on that bombshell.
It's time for us to say cheerio.
Yes.
So let's say cheerio.
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 You have been listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Cheerio.
Cheerio. Music is by Attack of the Vapors, and the podcast is hosted by Audio Boom.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.